WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are still broadcasting in high quality mono sound, which sounds better than the stereo because I listened to the competitors last week. We don't sound like this, but we are AM radio and it's awesome. And I want everybody to set a dial out on AM 1570, especially for baseball season because we're up on it. It has been a wonderful basketball tournament. So this is going to be a baseball segment. Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to be over Costa celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week, get it back out on the road with our friends. At Win Donation, I'm going to be giving away the Maryland Lottery Instant Lottery Scratch-Offs out of Costa's. Our friends at Win Donation also providing beautiful thing. My cat was loving looking at the spring springing out the window. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. You know the deal at Win Donation and our friends at the Maryland Lottery. John Martin's going to be with us. Costas on Wednesday afternoon, Friday morning, we're at Fadley's. That's the day after opening day, the day that Bruce Springsteen, Nils Lofgren, Roy Bittan, Gary W. Talon, all the E Street Band will be here. Sister Susie Tyra, they'll all be here on Friday, and then the Eagles in town on Saturday, and not the Philadelphia Eagles, the good Eagles. You know, Hotel California, Don Henley, Joe Walsh, those Eagles will be in town. Timothy B. Schmidt singing like an angel down at the CFG Bank Arena. That's next Friday morning at Fadley's. By the time we get there, we'll have a national champion. Might be San Diego State, dude. I have no idea. I want to do baseball with you, and we'll get to opening day, but I want to give just a little bit of oxygen to basketball. We're not going to do a whole segment on it, but we both spent the weekend watching basketball. My wife wanted it on. We wanted it on. All these teams get knocked out. The whole state of Texas got screwed, which I love. Wow, what a unique Final Four. And we talk about what the transfer portal, NIL, what all this is going to do. It's going to create mayhem in college basketball. Already has.
Yeah, it sure feels that way. And one of the fears, if you recall, was the transfer portal was one thing, but a lot of the NIL talk, which is still marinating, right? We still don't know exactly how all that's going to look and fit and work long term. But the fear was what? The national powerhouses would become even more powerful and completely shut out, you know, shield out the little guy from making
Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, San Diego State, Miami. I mean, look at Miami. You had Miami and Texas playing football schools, right? Well, not so much this year anyway.
I text Jazz Golski, told him quite a legacy you left down there in Miami for Jim Larrañaga.
Great theater. And you just mentioned his name. I was talking about this with some buddies just over the last two weekends, really. I mean, Jim Larrañaga's, he doesn't get the due that he deserves. I mean, we all remember years ago with Mason and all of that, but to see what he's done at a football school, right? I mean, Miami is, as much as in these parts, we tear down the ACC, and look, the ACC is not what it used to be. It's not, you know, even if Maryland were still in the ACC, it's not what it used to be, but you have to give Miami credit, and Larrañaga doing what he's done there, pretty impressive. But I mean, what a Final Four, right? I mean, I think of those four teams, UConn's the favorite, probably should be. If you've watched how they've played really good basketball, but my goodness, you know, no one seeds, no two seeds. I mean, it's wild, right? And my one fear, Nestor, is I do fear what the TV ratings are going to look like for the Final Four, because you know the NCAA has been talking about it, expanding the field, expanding the number of teams. And if they don't have a great number for the Final Four in terms of ratings, because you don't have those big blue blood schools involved, I do fear a little bit of that being a catalyst for expanding the field, because they say, well, okay, we're not going to get as good of ratings, we'll just expand the field and we'll expand the volume of TV and the packages that we can sell and what have you. So that's in the back of my mind. But again, in the short term, in the present, in the now, I mean, it's been fun. I wouldn't say the quality of play has always been great. You know, we've seen some low scoring games and some games where it wasn't impressive. But how about Miami? I mean, they score into the high 80s, and I mean, they did it. They weren't shooting threes. I mean, they were very efficient from the field, and they made their free throws. And I mean, they just played fantastic basketball over the last 7-8 minutes of that game. So it's a fun weekend. It really was. Certainly not a Final Four that I think anyone who likes to make a wager or two, I can't imagine too many people were picking any of these teams, you know, all four of these teams, let alone if you pick maybe one or two, good job. But just unexpected, right? I mean, as much as I appreciate greatness and dynasties and things of that nature,
I like Florida Atlantic just as good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, absolutely. I mean, we saw Princeton do special things. I mean, Fairleigh Dickinson doing what they did against Purdue. I mean, it's been a fun tournament. It really has. And I think this second weekend did a nice job of following the first weekend. I mean, I thought the opening weekend of the tournament was so incredible in so many ways. I didn't know if the second weekend would live up to that or be able to follow that. And I thought it did. So it was a nice, you know, it's been a fun tournament. As you mentioned, as we now transition into baseball starting this week on the heels of a really fun WBC tournament, it's definitely, it's been fun. And
so you were watching the Ohtani Trout thing big time, like, right? Like that for any baseball fan. And I talked about attending, you know, those games 15, 16 years ago, whenever it was out in LA, that this is, you know, that the tournament has taken a new step when you have teammates facing each other on the final pitch, the two best players in the sport. I mean, they didn't draw it up that way, but it would have been great theater if they had.
Vince McMahon could not have booked that any better at WrestleMania. I mean, that's how perfect that was. I mean, that sounds like a lousy sports B-movie script, right? I mean, for that to work out the way that it did, the number of variables involved, the way that Ohtani was going out to the bullpen and then having to come back because he was due up in the to hit, you know, that was kind of going back and forth the last three, four innings. It's funny, Nestor, I was talking about this with just a couple other baseball fans in my life. Dream matchups and what interleague play has done to kind of destroy that aura of AL versus NL and the All-Star game every year and all those different dream matchups. The reality is those dream matchups don't remain dream matchups for long anymore, right? I mean, starting this year, every team's going to play one another. You're going to play all 29 other teams, at least for one series. So chances are, okay, you might have a pitcher miss a hitter for a year or two, but ultimately they're going to face off and we're going to see it because Ohtani's going to leave the Angels and he's going to face off against Mike Trout again at some point in a major league setting.
Yeah. But I never got to see Schmidt and Palmer or, you know, the guys that never left leagues. That was that's very old now. That's over with. And in every other sport, it never worked that way. Right. Like, so you never had that problem anywhere that, you know, the Rams and the Ravens could get together in the regular season and the Super Bowl is something from a baseball heart that is 30 years ago now. Interleague plays 30 years old, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what, 97 was the first year. So, yeah, we're coming up 26 years for that. And, I mean, the other sports, other than a quarterback against a quarterback, and, you know, I mean, there was the Eli against Peyton Manning, and, you know, you have that a little bit, but it's not that direct one-on-one dream setting. I mean, as far as what we saw, Ohtani against Trout, as far as a one-off kind of dream matchup in a baseball setting, that was as good as it gets. And I get it, it's not Game 7 of the World Series, so I don't want to make it out to be too much compared to what it was, but it was still special. I mean, that was cool. I mean, that was really cool. As you said, Ohtani, who for my money is the best player in baseball today, against Mike Trout, who's been the best player in baseball over the last decade. So, I mean, just it was fantastic. And it really made me think about dream matchups of the past. I mean, I was thinking, like, for the Orioles, what would have been the equivalent of that? You know, Jim Palmer never faced off against Brooks Robinson in a real meaningful game setting, or Palmer against Eddie Murray, because, you know, by the time Eddie had left, Palmer was already, you know, on his way to the Hall of Fame.
Now, Whitey Ford pitching to Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, I started thinking about, like, what would be some of the best, you know, all-time kind of settings of that? And, you know, I had someone ask me, before Ohtani faced off against Trout, what was the closest thing I could think of? And it wasn't a perfect comparison, but it did make me think a little bit of Pedro Martinez in that 99 All-Star game going up against McGuire and Sosa at Fenway Park. Yeah, that was pretty special. And they, you know, he faced off against those guys at other points, but just that kind of setting, that kind of stage. I mean, it was cool. And it was a nice warm up for now going into opening day, understanding that, you know, the same stakes aren't there for every single night of a 162 game schedule. But for the Orioles specifically, first time we're talking about meaningful baseball, hope, expectations going into a season since they were kind of still holding on at the beginning of 2018. I mean, we know how disastrous that season turned out, but there were people that were still hoping at that point in time. They had signed Alex Cobb a couple of weeks before that. But, you know, it's been a minute. It's been 5 years since we've been talking about the Orioles on the cusp of opening day and actually thinking they've got a chance to make the playoffs this year. You know, there's no question. Things have to go well, and there are questions, and there are things to be concerned about. The health of the bullpen right now is, you know, something that, you know, I look at with Dylan Tate's out. Looks like Michael Gibbons probably going to start the year on the IL with some knee soreness. But by and large, you've got a really interesting, young, talented team that still has some growing up to do, still has some maturing to do. But boy, it's exciting, and there are other guys on the way. I mean, there were guys who aren't making the 26-man roster who had very compelling springs. You know, a Jordan Westberg. Heston Kerstad had a monster spring. Colton Cowser. You know, we'll see what happens with D.L. Hall as he works up his innings a little bit and see where he fits over the next several weeks.
Well, he's the real savior, right? We're all like, where's your offseason? If D.L. Hall comes up July 1st and makes 18 starts and looks like a legitimate 3-ish ERA kind of pitcher, then that is where the cavalry is, right? I don't know where I'm going to talk about John Means. I brought him up a couple weeks ago as well. And we all know they could trade this. We all know they have money and blah, 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 blah. And they could do, and they have talent to make deals if they find themselves in the race. But D.L. Hall's, you were a proponent of this, of not starting the season in Baltimore, right?
Yeah. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez is the real one. And even that, there's been some question. He's kind of had a rough spring. I don't know how much stock I put in spring stats. I really don't. Other than health, other than really extreme struggles and his last three starts, he had a really bad inning in each one of them. And that's cost him statistically. But whether you're talking about D.L. Hall, whether you're talking about Grayson Rodriguez, sure. We look at this rotation. Yes, they added Kyle Gibson. Yes, they added Cole Irvin. Those guys raise the floor. They give you innings. They're dependable veteran starters. You know, they'll do what the idea is, they'll do a better job of what Jordan Lyles did a year ago for them, which he did a pretty nice job for what they asked him to do. But in terms of upside, in terms of the arguments you're making for this team to make the postseason, for this team to have a puncher's chance if they get in the postseason, yeah. You're looking at Grayson Rodriguez. You're looking at D.L. Hall. You know, Grayson is, you know, widely regarded as either the best or the second best pitching prospect in baseball. Hall, there's a little more question with him. I do wonder if long term, maybe he settles into becoming your closer. But you're certainly not making that decision now. To the point or the question you just posed to me, I was fully on board with the idea of if he's not in your opening day rotation, send him back to Norfolk and have this guy continue to build and develop as a starter, because he's not a finished product. I mean, he has unbelievable talent, but the walk rate has been something that's dogged him over the course of his career, in addition to some injuries, as we know. So I love the idea of sending him to Norfolk, let him build up. And I'm not even sure you mentioned July 1st. And I know you were just saying that, you know, just as an example, but you know, it could be May 10th. It could be May 15th. If D.L. Hall goes to Norfolk and builds up and looks good, and he's throwing strikes and dominating. So this is really a case where you look at their 26-man roster that's set this week. It's going to change. And we know it always changes because of injuries or because of guys being ineffective. I think the difference now is you look at their 26-man roster going into Fenway on Thursday and opening day and all of that. There is a very real chance, if not a very real likelihood, you know, strong likelihood, that this roster will change, and it'll be because guys at AAA are forcing their way into Baltimore, forcing their way into the majors. And you know, it's one thing to talk about Rutschman a year ago, and we knew what was going on there. The pandemic slowed him down. They were doing the service time thing, you know, and he got hurt. I mean, he got hurt last spring. It was really more that than the injury, even, because you know, he ended up finishing second rookie of the year, and they lost that, you know, that manipulation anyway. But it's different when you're talking about a Jordan Westberg who kind of outplayed Adam Frazier during the spring. You know, Frazier's making $8 million, so he's going to, you know, be their starting second baseman, and we'll see how it plays out. And certainly there are traits that he has that they value, but you have a Jordan Westberg. You have a Joey Ortiz at shortstop who some people feel might have a glove. as good, if not better, than Jorge Mateo, and they think he might be able to hit at the major league level based on what he did last year. So you have him, you have Colton Cowser, you have Heston Kerstad. We already mentioned Hall. I mean, it's you have a list of guys that this year and next year, and I haven't even mentioned a Jackson Holliday, who certainly not this year, but who knows if he's the phenom that the Orioles think he can be. He could be in the majors at some point next year. So the point is, you have this roster as it currently is constructed that has upside. I mean, starting with Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, but you've got other guys on the way, and the veterans and incumbents, the message is very clear. You better perform, because there are going to be guys that are on the come that are going to be here before you know it. So that's where you look at, I don't know, an Austin Hayes, for example, and talked about him a lot last year. Had a great first half, struggled in the second half, had the wrist and struggled. You know, numbers were not very good. He had a strong spring, but the point is, for someone like him, okay, he's been around a few years, but Colton Cowser might be ready sooner rather than later. You know, Heston Kerstad, we'll see on him, but that could be late, you know, at some point later this season. The point is, there's a lot of competition. And this is not a case where any of these guys are on scholarship anymore, meaning the incumbents that have been around for a few years. So that's exciting. And as you alluded to, when you have that kind of depth, you can make trades. You have competition that you can optimize your lineup. So, you know, it really is a case of what this roster looks like on Thursday. It always changes because of attrition, right? But I think we very well could see changes as the year goes on, because the Orioles feel that there's someone at AAA that's better, that's ready to take a job. So I find that to be very exciting in a big picture sense, not just for 2023, but what things look like for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Well, we waited a long, long time for them to have a pipeline of baseball players.
Sure.
And to be on the front end of this funnel of prosperity. And so let's talk about the sport itself. Luke Jones is here. You're following the Baltimore, Luke. We're getting into baseball today. We got opening day. I want to remind everybody, we're going to be at Costas on Wednesday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week on the 5th. And then on the 7th, we're going to be at Fadley. So we are going to be around celebrating the start of baseball, celebrating opening day, celebrating this beautiful new arena that we're going to have, that's going to have Brian Adams and Anita Baker and all sorts of rock stars and people coming to town. And it's going to be fun. So fun summer ahead, a baseball summer ahead, and this is where the heartbeat changes. Luke, I went downtown on Sunday. I was over at the Chaucer. Ran into Jimmy Smith, by the way. Says hello. His hair and my hair, it's a competition. And right now I'm winning, and he admitted as much, but I did see Jimmy Smith out the other day. Being downtown, sun's out, drove into the city, went down Central Avenue, went down, you know, like, seeing new things, seeing that the weather's changing, seeing that this baseball team's here. You're into it. The baseball people are into it. They've been trying to sell some tickets here and again in social media and doing a DoorDash, like, come in April, it'd be $10 or whatever. Buy some tickets for the A's series 2 weeks from now. I've seen this stuff. I don't think anybody's buying any tickets. I think they have some billboards up. I think they've done a terrible – I mean, it's still Lamar, 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 Lamar. And when it was Maryland 2 weeks ago, right? So I don't know when they become part of the DNA and we start playing every night, we get into this. Part of them having a chance, better chance, not the shift, not the pitch clock, because that affects everybody. But this scheduling thing is fascinating to me, because for so many years – and I go back 20 years with this before you were a part of my life. You've been here almost 15 years now, right? I made the case that when the Nationals came, that the Orioles would have been better served to go to the National League and play ball with the Braves and the Mets. Obviously, from a competitive standpoint at that time, given the disparity and the salary tax and like all of the luxury tax and all that nonsense 2 decades ago, I thought if they moved to the National League, they would have seen the Expos at the time or the Nationals at the time, and that would have been its own rivalry, right? The imbalanced schedule, you're playing everybody in your own division 14, 16, 18 times a year, whatever it is. Seeing the Yankees and the Red Sox for 20 years at a time when the Orioles were paupers and poorly run and like all, and hiding all the mass and money. They're all living on the Ness and money and the Yes money and like all of that. This notion that if this sticks and they never go back to divisional play, and I don't know why they would, other than we want to be closer to Boston and New York and keep teams geographically closer so they travel less. And that's a union issue. That's an issue because this schedule is going to be screwy. We're going to feel it and see it. Or like, oh, we don't play the Yankees anymore. We don't play the Red Sox. Where are the Blue Jays? Where are the Rays? We used to like seeing them, and then they kicked our ass for 20 years because they're better than us and a bit better than us. So they became a – every team in the division has been a problem when your owner's a schmuck. No offense to Peter Schmuck. I would just say this year's different because they have commensurate talent with everyone else, and I hear the Red Sox are in the dumper and other teams have maybe not competed in the way the spirit of spending, spending, spending. Everybody's pulling back and letting players go other places. The Orioles have a better chance over the next 5 years of making the playoffs, being a wild card, being a dominant team, all of that because of the schedule. They're going to play more bad teams than they've ever played, and they're not a bad team anymore. That alone might be worth 8 or 10 wins a year, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the schedule. I mean, and you're still going to play your division plenty, but it's 13 games as opposed to what, 19 or 18 or 19, whatever it was. I mean, you have two home series and two away series. It used to be three of each. So I think the breakdown is everyone else in the AL, you'll play what, six times or seven times, I think it is. And the big difference, and I think this is where I do like it from in a big picture sense, not just for the Orioles, but for baseball in general, is because we've ripped off the Band-Aid of interleague play a long time ago, right? I've always fancied myself as a little more of a purist than most people my age who like baseball. But I was certainly someone that at the time interleague play was interesting. I think it kind of, you know, it kind of ran its course as far as a novelty. But now when you talk about it and understanding it's not, you know, it's not going away, right? The NL has the DH now. I mean, like all the different things that we talked about and debated for years, you know, it's not going back to the way it was in 1995. But I think it is fun to know that you're going to play every team every year from a scheduling standpoint, from an interest standpoint. Some of the best players in the National League, you know, that conceivably every other year, you know, they'll be coming to Baltimore, right? So you'll have some more of that. But I think it made sense when you expanded. It was one thing to talk about having one wild card team when you know when we started talking about interleague play, but this idea now that you have three wild cards and knowing, even looking at how the Orioles were in it at the end of last year and talking about Seattle and all the different teams that were battling it out, you know, that they were battling, it only makes more sense to have a little bit more of a balanced schedule. You know, yeah, you should always play your division rivals more, but did it have to be as drastic as it was? And that's where, you know, I'm hoping what we're seeing with the new balance schedule will remain that way. You know, I don't want it to ever get to a point where we just get rid of the divisions. You know, some people have proposed that or making it all geographic or whatever. And, you know, I still like the tradition of the AL East, for example, but if you're going to have three wild cards and you're going to make it where, you know, teams from the East or the Central or the West are competing for a playoff spot, if they're not winning the division, then it should be a little more balanced. So, we'll see how it plays out ultimately, but yeah, it's not quite as, especially for a team like the Orioles, who, you know, they're not there yet. They're ascending. I think, you know, they have a chance to be a playoff team this year. I certainly wouldn't be shocked if they make it, but I also don't think they're going to win 100 games. You know, I don't think they're at the pinnacle just yet as it relates to this process, but certainly will help if you're not having to play the Yankees 19 times or Tampa or Toronto, you know, three teams that I think are still all going to be very, very tough. You know, Red Sox, I kind of feel, you know, the Red Sox and the Orioles are kind of, you know, if you look at the division, you know, you look at the projections, you look at division previews and all those different things, kind of feels like they're two ships that are passing in the night going in opposite directions. I feel like the Orioles are going in the right direction and the Red Sox, I mean, just look at all the attrition of guys, you know, Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts. And I mean, what happened? Like, they're the Red Sox and they lost all their guys, you know, other than Devers, I guess.
And they don't have Mike Elias drafted for them, and they weren't drafting at the bottom either, right? I mean, they're
sure. Oh, right. And no question. So that's where you look at this thing and say, but you still have the Yankees, you still do have the Rays, you still have Toronto, who has a ton of talent. So it's not going to be easy, but it is much more reasonable to look at it on paper and say, all right, 13 games against each of those teams. That feels a little more reasonable. But on the flip side, and I don't want to sell the Orioles too short here, all of those teams are looking at the Orioles way differently than they did 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where you're saying, oh, are we going to go? We gonna go 15-3 this year, or is it gonna be 14-4? I mean, that's how it had been. So you know, so that's
but when
where,
you get games against the Pirates and you get games against the sure. Diamondbacks and you get you get these National League games that are replacing Yankees, Rays, sure. Blue Jays, and even Red Sox, because the Red Sox have traditionally been good. I don't know how long they'll be down, but I think when you start to replace those games over 25 games, you start to think, oh, maybe we go 17-8 in those games instead of 10-14.
Yeah, but you can also say, but the Yankees are also playing the Orioles less and playing those teams more. So, I mean, I think it'll be good. Again, what impact will it have? You know, it's difficult to quantify that because you're talking about.
I think it's more fair. You're just yeah. fair. The sure. game of baseball sure. is not fair. It's never been fair. I've been on the air 31 years. They've screwed it up. The original sin is that they all have a different amount of money, and they're all trying to figure out how to keep the Yankees and the Pirates and the Royals in the same league. And they've yeah. never really done a great job of doing that. But part of that is when we talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox, they don't get Adley Rutschman. They don't get Heston Kerstad. They don't get those players. They have to then go buy those players. They have to buy Teixeira later on and give him $35 million a year in order to have him. So, you know, maybe Adley Rutschman will be a Red Sox or a Yankee or a Dodger at some point, but they're going to have to pay a lot of money to do that, where the Orioles get him in his prime at this point. And that's the balance for the league, and then you have to take advantage of that, which is why DL Hall needs to be up, which is why Grayson Rodriguez needs to be an is and not a might be, right?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I mean, where they are right now, yeah, they need their young guys to hit. They need their young guys to be as advertised. And you know that they're not all going to work out. It's like I said, I still wonder if DL Hall long term settles into becoming the new Zach Britton, so to speak. You know, not the same kind of pitcher, but starter who is optimal in the bullpen. But you're not going to do that right now. But yeah, I mean, you look at these young guys, you look at their payroll right now. Look, we've talked about this. Was it a great offseason? No, it wasn't. They could have absolutely should have done more than they did. But that said, that doesn't mean that I think what they have is not intriguing, is not really interesting, is not very, very talented as far as their roster goes. But you are counting on a lot of young guys, and we'll see how it ultimately plays out. And I think, you know, it's an exciting time. And you made mention of this in passing. And look, is the ballpark going to be filled in April? No, it rarely is anyway. You know, even during the Buck Showalter era, it wasn't filled in April. But I do think for the first time in a long time, the general hope that they have, but also, and look, the NFL is king. Let's be clear about this. It's king in every market that has the NFL, even if you have a baseball team that's good. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I do think this is a golden opportunity for the Orioles from an interest standpoint, from a passion standpoint. When you consider where the Ravens are right now with Lamar Jackson, this is a very frustrated fan base, very frustrated. And you have a lot of unsettled feelings about where are they going? You know, where are they going with Lamar? If Lamar is not going to be their long-term quarterback, what are they doing? So there is a sense for the Orioles to capture some of that attention. Now, it's temporary in the sense that once the Ravens kick off in September, people will be all in because it's the NFL. But there is a chance here for the Orioles to capture a little more attention, a little more of that energy, a little more juice. And if they get off to a good start, I think that would go a long way to doing some of that. Now, from a business standpoint, they've got to have the right deals and all those different things, ticket offers and things of that nature to really take advantage of that renewed interest. But I think this is an exciting time for the Orioles. And with the Ravens being in such an uncertain period of time right now, it's a chance for them to, you know, put a little bit of a dent into that. And to, you know, you can support both teams. You can be excited about both teams. You can watch both teams. You know, they're different sports. But there is very much a sense of people that I think are just so fatigued over the Lamar Jackson saga that if the Orioles can get off to a good start and they're 13-7, 3 and a half weeks into the season, I think people are going to be excited. And I think you'll slowly but surely see a little bit more of that out at the ballpark. So, you know, it's not something that happens overnight, but I think it is a great opportunity for the Orioles where they are, being so young, having the talent that they have, knowing that there's more on the way, knowing that you have a deep farm system, hoping at the very least, and again, I'm not holding my breath until I see it, but hoping that more money will be spent at some point in time to augment and supplement what they have. But they have a lot going for them right now. You know, even with their issues, even with ownership and long-term lease question and all that, they still have a lot going for them on the field right now. And that's something that we could not say for a long time. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, head to Fenway and see what happens this weekend. And then they'll be back next week and we'll see how this 2023 season begins.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, and we can all beat the Red Sox up a little bit over the weekend here before we get back to downtown on the 6th. On the 5th, we're going to be at Costas in the afternoon celebrating 50 years of the Maryland Lottery by giving away these, the instant scratch-offs. Our friends at Window Nation will be there. I might even have the floppy hat on, 866-90-NATION. If you're in the market for windows, make sure you're taking care of that right now. You buy two, you get two free, 0% financing. Had a long chat with Dennis Colazzos last week about 0% financing and what that represents. That is on the 5th. 6th is opening day. I'll be downtown for that. And then on the 7th, back downtown in the morning at Fadley's to get ready for Bruce Springsteen and the Eagles. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, bringing it out on the road. We have new dates. Going to be at Captain Larry's downtown in Federal Hill later on in April. Our friends at Pappas, our newest sponsor, our annual sponsor, we're going to be up in Bel Air, bringing the show up to Harford County. Everybody up there is excited about having Pappas Crab Cakes in Harford County, so we'll be excited about that too. Going to be a big, big April around here. So basketball, so baseball, and the Lamarathon. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.